Clouds Below Your Knees by Texas native Ray Lynch, and that's our way of saying that it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So, What's Your Story? Hi, I'm Warren Holloman, and during the daylight hours, you'll find me working in the medical center. But when the sun goes down, I start hearing stories in my head, and on Thursday evenings, I'm not alone. I team up with Mary Edgerton, Greg Audell, Hank Rubicek, Nicole Grady, and Alondra Mejia to bring you the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. And we're right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston. Helping out tonight, as always, is our amazing intern, Nicole Grady. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Warren.
How's your week been so far?
You know, I've made it thus far, so I can't complain. And yours?
Okay. You still an honors student?
Absolutely. I'm an honor student still.
Way to go.
Thank you.
The reason Nicole and I do this show is we believe that every day of every life is a story worth telling. And when we look at the stories of our lives, we find there's a script that our lives are supposed to follow. Our childhood is supposed to be a time of innocence. Then comes chapter two, that turbulent time of adolescence. Then chapter three, adulthood, where all our energy is channeled toward establishing ourselves in our lives, in our careers, our life partner, growing a family, all that stuff. Then after decades of work, we retire and another chapter begins. We enjoy a few years of relaxation, and then at the end comes the final chapter, maybe the bad part. We get sick and we die. But what if the story of our lives doesn't follow that script? What if the sickness, and perhaps even the death, don't wait until the end of our lives to show up? What if it shows up earlier, say in our childhood or early adulthood? What happens to the innocence then, and how does that change the plot, the story of our lives? My storytelling guest tonight has had many shocks and surprises, and she's had many twists and turns to the plot that is the story of her life. I first met her when we both worked together at MD Anderson. At the time, I didn't know that she was also a patient at MD Anderson, and that before all that, she had been a student at MD Anderson, graduating in 2003 with a degree in cytogenetics. She worked in the medical field for over 10 years, and she's published two books on the importance of self-awareness. She's now focused on leading products to promote wellness. As you can see, she wears many hats. Mitra Mostofi, welcome to So What's Your Story?
I'm enchanted to be here. Thank you.
We're delighted you're here. Now, right off the bat, I want to say that your book has an intriguing title. It's called This Was No Coincidence. How did you come up with that?
Well, there's a series of not-so-random events that I narrate in my book, and somewhere between complete free will and complete fate, there lies my title, This Was No Coincidence. Some might call it divine intervention, or some, you can, you know, conceptualize it through quantum physics. And recently there's an author that actually published a book explaining the mathematical concept of no coincidences. So,
Wow. And the cover it's like the coolest cover there is. I hope everybody will log on to our Facebook site and see the cover.
Thank you.
You started writing when you were just a child. I think you said in the fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you... a lot of people write. Why did you decide to publish a book?
Yeah, I actually have taught some journaling classes and workshops, and I encourage anyone to journal. It's very therapeutic. There's a lot of clarity that comes from it, but I don't recommend that everybody publishes. It's a whole different beast in itself.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to publish this book when I came up with the title, especially because the title keeps on reoccurring for me. And also the cover, I just knew it's just such a captivating cover. It's really about denuding and derooting yourself in your self-awareness journey. So I wanted the message to get out there.
Well, you did. You've done a great job. And the cover, we should just tell people... How would you describe the cover?
Well, they have to purchase it to see the cover.
Okay. We'll keep them guessing. The first chapter of the book is titled, I Had Cancer Before I Was Born. Could you tell us that story?
Sure will. It all started when I was born. Okay, probably a little before that, but since this is a self-help memoir, then it sounds better to say it started when I was born. When my mom was pregnant with me, she felt a lump in her left breast. At the time, we were living in Iran, a country undergoing revolutionary turmoil along with the war with Iraq. Mind you, cancer was a death sentence because of the priority given to the soldiers and the lack of medical attention for treatment. The doctors claimed the lump was dried milk. They induced her with hormones to inhibit her milk production. So I'm thinking my older brother got the last batch of the organic breast milk, and I got stuck with the hormone-induced leftovers. Some time had passed, and Maman was in her third pregnancy. I can't disrespect her by referring to her by her first name, because her spirit will come down from the heavens and pull my ear, so I will have to refer to her as Maman, which means mom in Farsi. And that's the way we always knew her. The doctors no longer were convinced that her 6-inch tumor was dried milk. She was 28 when she heard her death sentence. Her prognosis was about 6 months to live at stage 3 breast cancer. My dad's reaction was something like, "Oh, hell no." That is my Texan translation for what he really said in Farsi at the time when he knew very little English and even less the Texan accent. His plan was to get her medical attention outside of Iran, so no matter what it took. He sold all his assets and took the most courageous risk ever known in our family. He had been the first to attend university. He got accepted to one of the top universities in Iran. He became a civil engineer and co-owned an engineering company. We lived in an affluent part of Tehran. If all that doesn't give you an understanding of the success he sacrificed, let me further revere our august dad in that we were the only one in our family who owned a VCR. He would be risking losing his company rights permanently, getting blacklisted for abandoning his company and country, not getting granted permanent residency in the U.S., and deportation. The most concerning risk to him, above all, was raising us in a country foreign to him, separate from family, support, and cultural upbringing. It was no coincidence that all four of us were able to leave Iran to London when exiting was restricted. Then for all four of us to miraculously be granted visas to the U.S. London is where Maman eventually had a double mastectomy, lymphectomy, termination of her pregnancy, and an oophorectomy. From my later childhood years, I remember her scars clearly. They never really bothered me, I guess, because I was so much more interested in trying on her silicone-padded bra prosthesis. I always thought, wow, I can't wait to have some melons the size of these. Of course, they appeared huge to me as an 8-year-old. My boobs never grew to be the size of melons, more like oranges. And once a month, maybe the size of grapefruits, but never melons. What remained more remarkable in my thoughts for years afterward is how supportive our dad, Baba, was as a husband who truly loved his wife, not for her boobs, but for her personality and for her as a mother. So from my years of searching for an amazing husband, I worked on building a rockin' personality, yet always had that ominous thoughts in the back of my mind. Would this guy still stay with me if my chest had nothing but scars on it? Would he still love me and see me for who I really am? My fear in facing a guy's reaction led me to be selective in whom I wanted to flash for beads, figuratively, that is. Instead, I started using my creativity and making my own beaded necklaces because an amazing man like our dad don't come around often. Maman continued to receive radiation treatments when we arrived in the U.S. in 1984. She took tamoxifen, a breast cancer preventative drug, for about 6 years afterward. She was doing great for most of our childhood. We remembered her to be healthy, happy, and only super fatigued by us annoying kids. We were in Florida on our yearly family travels in 1990 when she complained to our dad that she was having severe back pain. When we returned to Houston, our dad took her to her doctor. The doctor referred her to MD Anderson, where they found the cancer had metastasized to her bones. The amazing physicians at MD Anderson eradicated the metastatic cancer cells in her bones, then her lungs, then her liver, and could only do so much when it spread to her brain. Bubba's reaction each metastasis was, "Oh, hell nah." And again, I'm only translating with a Texas drawl. Maman used to say the spirit of Israel, the angel of death that takes you away after you die, had come to take her away several times, but her husband stands in his way and says, "Oh, hell nah." Our amazing dad kept her alive for 11 years after her poor six-month prognosis. He gave up only when she was admitted to hospice care, when it was no longer in his control. It was time for Maman to impact the rest of our lives in ways we never imagined would result from losing a mother. It was no coincidence that the clinical trials Maman underwent were going to be the standard protocol for my own cancer care.
Wow. Mitra, that's such a tender story, and I love the way you talk about the love that your father showed for your mother and your family, but you tell it through the eyes of a child. It's really nice. Thank you. What was it like for you to tell that story?
It's
rather personal and intimate and sad. And
yeah, I still seem to have a visceral reaction when I tell the story out loud. It's never a good age to lose a mother. So, yeah, it's, sometimes I'm inspired by my own story, and other times I ponder how my identity, my self-worth and value would have been influenced with a unconditional nurturing care of a mother. So.
Yeah. Wow. And what would you like our listeners to take from your story? What do you want them to hear?
From this particular excerpt of my book, I think immigration, the importance of allowing immigration and not making such a strict requirement for families to be able to have this kind of care in parts of the world that they're not fortunate enough to have. I think that's what I really want people to take away from this, because my life could have really taken a different course had we not been able to leave the country. We definitely wouldn't have had 10 years of experience having a mother. Mm-hmm. So, that's the biggest takeaway from this, is the importance of allowing borders to be more welcoming.
Yeah. In reading the book, I mean, your father gave up a lot of wealth to come here, but then he gained the intangibles that mean so much more. Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, you've been listening to So What's Your Story? Our guest storyteller this week is Mitra Mostofi, author of This Was No Coincidence. We're right here on listener-sponsored, corporate-free, 90.1 KPFT Houston. If you're down in Galveston, you can hear us at 89.5. If you're up in Livingston, 90.3. I'm going to bring Nicole back in now so she can tell our audience about our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. Nicole?
Thanks, Warren. The Guild is one of the most active local storytelling organizations in the United States. The atmosphere is always casual and friendly. It's a place you can come and try out one of your new stories, or you can just enjoy listening to other stories and get to know other storytellers as well. Now, the Guild meets at the Haven Center at 1805 West Alabama, and it's right here in Montrose.
It's a great venue, and the location is, I think you'll agree, absolutely divine. I mean that kind of literally. It's between St. Stephen's Episcopal Church and the Chocolate Bar. So if you don't believe in God, eat some good dark chocolate, and you may have a change of heart.
Amen to that.
It was the answer to our prayer, right?
That's right.
The Houston Storytellers Guild meets the fourth Tuesday night of the month, but in November, they shake things up a bit, and they host the annual Telebration. It's a storytelling party at the Black Labrador on Montrose Boulevard, and it's this Saturday, November 19th.
And you can check it out and all of their cool events at their website, www.houstonstorytellers.org, where you can hear all of our shows on their website, too.
And speaking of websites, what's going on with us?
Well, you can follow us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page. Right. You can send us posts and pics, and don't forget to like us when you leave. And also, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter.
Cool. Next week, Hank is hosting. What's he got going?
Well, next week, of course, is Thanksgiving, and Hank's got a special show lined up to fit the occasion. He will play family stories from past shows and tell a new one of his very own. Always great stuff on So What's Your Story? You keep loving stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you.
And speaking of Hank, we have a special announcement.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Dr. Hank. He's taking a well-deserved break tonight, guys, from the show to go out and celebrate with Peggy, his wife. So, Hank, if you're at Whataburger, make sure you have it your way and take advantage and our advice of those double fries. You only live once.
And, Nicole, this is just between you and me, okay?
Okay.
Okay. But sometimes I wonder about Hank's loyalty to the show, skipping out on us like this. And this isn't the first time. I understand he missed another show. I think it was, wasn't it back in 1994?
You know, it was back in the day. That it was quite a while ago. So if you're listening, Hank, happy 39th birthday to you.
And that's from all of us up here. Alondra, Greg, Mitra, everybody. Now back to our guest. Mitra, you just told a heartfelt story about war, about cancer, about immigration and resettlement, about loyalty, about things that matter most in life. There was also a lot of emotion in your story, particularly fear. I'm wondering how that scary part of your life affected you as you got older. Could you tell a story about that?
Sure. Well, when life gets complicated, I feel the need to unmangle my thoughts and all the mayhem by organizing and minimizing. And life got complicated. My life became a quagmire of mortality and relationships I wasn't ready for. Some days I would walk up and down the aisles of in the container store just to visualize what order looked like again. In order to unravel the confusion of what was happening to my friendships and my own survivorship, I organized people in the art of surviving into three categories: fearful, superficial, and true. I became the cancer vixen, the character in Marissa Marchetto's comic book. In her story, cancer highlighted the authentic relationships and purged the superficial ones. Before I could decide what kind of relationships were authentic, I had to find my own authenticity in this labyrinth. I imagined myself stranded on a deserted island. Would I be, one, the person who gives up and says, there is no way I'm going to survive this, so I might as well push my destiny forward and take my own life? Or, two, the person who is in denial and convinced there are other people on the island, there's plenty of food, and his or her name is God? Or would I be the third option, the person who is very much aware of the reality of what has happened and what might happen, but is willing to get creative and see where his or her destiny truly lies? And just then, the National Cancer Institute broadcasted that an individual is considered a cancer survivor from the moment of their diagnosis. But what was I surviving? I was angry that life was not going the way I planned, and friends were kicking me off the island of the cool kids. For me, being a survivor is a choice. I didn't start surviving until I chose to. I met patients who became fearless in most aspects of their life after their initial diagnosis of cancer, but didn't truly become survivors until they chose to. I was diagnosed in November 2007, but didn't choose to become a survivor until I started becoming more self-aware. The More to Life program was a great guide for me on my path. When I tell people the name of this program that guided me toward my transformation, they think I'm saying mortal life. The practical tools taught in More to Life are not to remind you of your mortality, but instead to coach you to truly live. With the stigma of having cancer came the fear of death. But what became more fearsome for me was to not truly live. A poem I read by John Donne profoundly expressed how the fear of death alone is more overbearing than death itself. Death, be not proud, thou, though some have called thee mighty and dreadful, for thou art not so. For those whom thou thinkest thou dost overthrow, die not, poor death, nor yet canst thou kill me. By the beginning of March, I attended my first breast cancer patient seminar. I was proud of myself for seeking support and going to educational seminars so early in my journey. Some wait until after they are done with all their treatments, and some wait until the afterlife to seek for help. I learned of options about treatment and recovery, not realizing it then, but looking back now, I know knowledge is power. Learning of my options lessened my fear, and a quote by an Italian surgeon mentioned in one of the lectures helped me be more accepting of getting breast reconstruction. Circa 1597, we restore, rebuild, and make whole those parts which nature hath given, but which fortune has taken away, not so much that it may delight the eye, but that it might buoy up the spirit and help the mind of the afflicted. I had been opposed to augmentation of perfectly healthy breasts. My opposing thoughts were restricting me from improving my own well-being. That's when I had the choice to let go of my stubbornness and look for other options. I thought about the three types of scenarios I'd envisioned stranded on a deserted island. Dead fish go with the flow. Rebels go against the current. Survivors accept reality and become one with water.
Wow. If you're just joining us, my guest tonight is Mitra Mostofi, author of This Was No Coincidence. Mitra, we hear that term cancer survivor a lot. And I think this is a really nice reflection for the rest of us who have not experienced cancer firsthand to get a handle on what it means. I found it very interesting that even you, as a cancer patient, took some time to sort of embrace that identity.
Mm-hmm.
And a big factor is not just fear, but I would say fears. There are fears of many things.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if you could share with our listeners a little more about the fear. You talk about fears of mortality, mm-hmm, and death. You talk about your body image, relationships.
Mm-hmm. Well, before the fear of mortality and not being, the fear of not being accepted settled in for me, I was terrified because I didn't have insurance. I was really afraid. I really was afraid for my family. I thought, my family was going to have to give up all their savings to, quote unquote, save my life. You know, we as immigrants have had to start over
right,
one too many times, you know. And so the Rose Clinic actually played a vital role in getting me treated, mm-hmm, and everything, because they provide screenings and mammograms and all kinds of breast health tests for the uninsured women and also insured. Mm-hmm. So I'm forever grateful to the Rose Clinic for that.
Wow. Yeah, the book has quite a tribute to the Rose Clinic in it.
Mm-hmm.
You were 26 years old, I guess, like a typical young person. You thought, I don't need health insurance.
Yeah, I really didn't think I did. I mean, I was taking a year sabbatical from work, mm-hmm, went to go travel the world, learn Spanish, relearn French, you know.
On top of Farsi and English.
Yes, on top of Farsi and English. Uh-huh. And, skinny dip in Nice, you know, whatever it took to live a fruitful 26-year-old life, you know.
Yeah.
But came back to Houston, stayed with my family. And again, you know, those series of events were definitely no coincidences, because I was residing in Austin prior to that. And I can't imagine going through this journey all by myself without family support.
So. Wow. So I'm just thinking of the relevance of the issues you faced to the current environment.
Oh, yeah.
The immigration challenges, mm-hmm, and you share in your book others.
Healthcare issues.
Yeah. But I'm thinking your brother's situation with immigration,
mm-hmm,
some real challenges there.
Mm-hmm.
And it all sort of comes back to full circle.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing was just the money, paying, how to pay for it. And
oh,
the
yeah,
Rose really literally saved your life.
Yeah, they navigated the entire system for me. I didn't
yeah,
have to, you know, worry about anything. There's women that have insurance and they're still having to, you know, file through the papers, mm-hmm, and everything. But the Rose Clinic completely navigated the system for me. But, you know, once all that was squared away and I got, you know, I was able to get into MD Anderson, that's when, you know, the concept of death started kicking in, and
mm-hmm,
little by little relationships, you know, mm-hmm, my cohorts it was at the time I took it personally, you know, why is everybody just kind of like vanishing?
Right.
You know, but, you know, after doing a lot of self-awareness, you realize that people deal with their own fears too. So, I'll probably never know, you know, why they vanished. But, yeah, I mean, it, you know, death is one of those topics that, you know, society evades all the time, but it's the one thing that we're guaranteed. You
right.
know, not even birth is guaranteed, you know. So why are we constantly avoiding the topic? It makes me wonder, you know, growing up, they tried to protect us and not allow us to see funerals and things like that. And I wonder if that had something to do with it. Death started becoming a taboo for me, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, of course, there's the primordial Darwinian instincts of survival of the fittest, and mm-hmm. that, along with Maslow's the need, you know, hierarchy of need, where cancer incarnated death. So I was no longer part of the rat race of surviving, you
yeah.
know, or procreating, I should say.
Yeah. And one of the other things in the book, just for those who will read it, I thought it was very instructive to learn what it's like being a 26-year-old who, at the time of her life, she's dating and that kind of thing, and to be dealing with a life-threatening illness, a disfiguring illness. That was very instructive as well.
Mm-hmm.
How would you like our readers to connect with you?
Well, I'm on social media, Mitra Mostofi. I'm on Instagram and Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty active on social media. I love connection, so please connect with me. I'm launching my website in January, mm-hmm. mitraship.com, MitraShip.com.
Okay.
Inspired by Star Trek. Mitra.com was already taken, so.
And we'll put that on our Facebook
page.
That'll
be great, yeah.
And if you're looking at us on Instagram, I'm holding up the book so you can see it. Oh, and Facebook. If you're looking at the video on Facebook, I'm holding that up now as well. Well, Mitra, I've thoroughly enjoyed your stories. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I'm sure our listeners have as well.
Thank you so much.
I want to thank you for joining us tonight. You've courageously shared with us a denuding and uprooting story of how important self-awareness is. In the book, you talk about everything from family to friends, love to loss, hope to fear, and self-esteem to shame. You've shared with us what happens when the life gets interrupted, whether it's your mother's very young life, your father's successful career, or your own life that reflected the entanglements of immigration. And you've shown how history sometimes repeats itself and sometimes it doesn't. Scooter is next with The Inner Side. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and we'll keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week, Nicole, Alondra, Mary, Greg, Hank, and I remind you that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than the ones you did. CIEE is looking for local families to host international high school exchange students arriving in August. Host families open their hearts and their homes. They share their life and their country. Make a difference. Change a young person's life. Contact CIEE at 800-448-9944 or visit